We're live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Thursday, July 19th. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, we'll get our weekly update from Juno Public Libraries with Kate Inge. Solar energy research engineer Roger Davenport will be here to share some of his knowledge with us. And SEAC will tell us how we can enjoy the great weather out there with a beach bonfire. Finally, we'll get our weekly arts and culture activities update with Arts Up. Those interviews, plus national native news, bird note music, and more, coming up right here on a Juno afternoon. Quick look at weather. Scattered showers for today with highs in the 60s, but tonight mostly clear with lows around 50, and tomorrow sunny with highs around 70. Flood warning is still in effect for the Mendenhall Lake area. Turn around, don't drown if you encounter a flooded road.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. Native Americans still face significant barriers to voting, from geography to poor training of poll workers to restrictive policies. That's the message during testimony from Native leaders at a joint U.S. Senate Indian Affairs and Rules Committee roundtable discussion in Washington, D.C. this week. Jackson Brossi, executive director of the Navajo Nation's Washington, D.C. office, said Navajo voters face four main barriers to voting. Those include long distances to polling places, different requirements in the three states that the Navajo Nation spans, poor language translations, and, he said, a problem that harkens back to a time of racist voting policies.
The fourth and final barrier that I want to talk about and that we should not have to talk about here in 2018 is blatant discrimination. Our people have been systematically denied access to fair representation in several jurisdictions.
Several of the Native leaders echoed Brossi's concerns and also complained about rules that suppress Native voting rights, including requirements by some states that voters list a street address rather than a post office box. The hearing included testimony from representatives of the Native American Rights Fund, which is compiling a report on voting barriers based on testimony at several hearings over the past year. A coalition of tribes and their allies are continuing to work on legislation to better serve their communities, such as securing tribal provisions in the Farm Bill. Reporter Melissa Townsend tells us more.
A coalition of over 130 tribes and Native organizations are working to establish greater self-determination over food and agriculture programs. Colby Duran is part of the Native American Farm Bill Coalition. He's policy director at the Indigenous Food and Agriculture Initiative at the University of Arkansas School of Law. He says the coalition wants the U.S. Department of Agriculture to allow tribal governments to run their own programs.
There's a lot of ability for USDA to kind of defer to states, and so we want to make sure that in all those different places where it defers to states, that it also defers to tribes as well.
And this goes way beyond food and agriculture. The USDA can lend money to state and local governments for rural development, so they can build anything from a community center to a housing complex to a broadband network. Colby Duran says the Native Farm Bill Coalition wants tribes to have access to that money.
That would really help tribal governments to be able to help build out their rural communities.
He says members of Congress have been very receptive to these policy proposals. The U.S. House and Senate are expected to negotiate the final farm bill throughout the month of July. For National Native News, I'm Melissa Townsend.
Legendary gun maker Remington got a buyout offer from a surprising source earlier this year, the Navajo Nation. The New York Times reports an attorney for the tribe offered between $475 million and $525 million for the company in May, and the Navajo Nation planned to pay in cash. Remington, which recently emerged from bankruptcy, rejected the bid last week. Navajo officials outlined a plan for the company that would have shifted it away from selling to consumers and instead focus on police and military contracts. The idea was to use profits from those lines of business to invest in developing so-called smart guns, which prevent anyone using a gun except its owner. Navajo officials also plan to shift assembly to the reservation and build out other production operations. In Michigan, the Native American Heritage Fund has awarded more than $300,000 in grants for the removal of offensive Native American imagery in public buildings and monuments around the state. The Belding School District will use the funds to remove images of its former mascot from its uniforms, and Battle Creek will use a small grant to replace a stained glass window in City Hall that depicts a settler clubbing a Native American. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwantlen Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by the American Indian Tourism Conference, providing technical resources and education to advance and develop tourism programs in Indian Country. Early bird registration ends July 31st at AITC2018.com. Support by Humboldt State University. We know what it means to be rooted in community. You can get your master's degree and amplify your voice without leaving your community. Online program applications accepted from August 1st to 31st at humboldt.edu/socialwork.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and today is Thursday, so that means it's time for our weekly update from Kate Inge at the Juno Public Libraries. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm so glad you can come in every week. Okay, so first of all, how did everything go last week? Did you have good turnouts for all your activities?
Not really. I think, unfortunately.
I thought you were going to say yes.
No. I think... You know, the weather got nice last week, and mm-hmm. we only had a couple people show up for the movie night last Thursday. But we have another one coming up on Sunday that maybe people can go to, and it's kid friendly, so that might be a good draw for people.
Okay. Yeah. So what have you got coming up this next weekend and next week?
So we have the next Great American Watch movie. It's not a movie night because it's at 2 in the afternoon on Sunday at the Valley Library, and this is a fantasy movie that's good for kids, so you can bring, you know, your whole family. You know, even if you don't have kids, you can still come, so everybody's welcome. It's like free. I think they're going to have some popcorn. It'll be a lot of fun.
Sounds good. And yeah, that's July 22nd. What time again?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. And which library?
The Valley Library.
Okay. Got that. What else?
We still have our usual like story times for kids a couple times during the week. I know there's one tomorrow at the Valley Library that you can bring your kids to. There's a couple on Mondays. And let's see.
There's one tonight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't there?
I think there was one today in Douglas.
Yeah.
That you could bring your kids to, that I think is over now. But they happen every...
Oh, gotcha.
They're every week until like our... Hardworking Youth Services Department takes a break right before school. And so you could just pretty much guarantee that we'll be having a story time when they're scheduled, because they're like every Monday, every Wednesday, every Thursday, every Friday.
And what is story time? What's it like? What's the format? Who reads the story? Who picks the story? How many stories are there?
Yeah. Ooh. So I know our children's librarians pick out stories, and the number kind of varies depending on what they have planned. If it's like a toddler time, there might be a couple less stories and more singing and like dancing for the kids, because the younger kids might not be able to sit still that long. And then for the slightly older kids, there'll be a couple more stories. And they'll go like summer themed stories in the summertime. Next month, when we get closer to school starting, they'll probably have some like school themed ones. And then we get into like fall, and they're always picking out theme stories because we have so many. So there's always like a new story for kids to hear.
And does it last about an hour and a half, something
about
like that?
30 minutes.
Oh, like 30 not, minutes.
Yeah,
less
not, too,
than that?
Not too long. Yeah.
So you can't just drop your kids off.
No.
Take
no.
off and come back.
No, but you can. I've worked at the library for about like 10 years, and I noticed that people will come with their kids for like the 30 minutes, and then they just kind of, you can stay afterwards, do your own story time, like talk with the other parents, get the kids to play a little bit. So, yeah, you can definitely stay longer than the 30 minutes.
Cool. So if parents are out there and you need some sort of activity for your yep. kiddos, that sounds like a good one. And yep. the summertime stories, the schedule is online at your yep. the library's website?
Yeah, online. We on our Facebook page. You can also call us to 586-5249, and you can call and ask.
I love the website. The website's looking really good these days.
I know.
The layout's changed quite a bit in the design.
It was just redesigned, and it looks so much nicer than, well, it looked good before, but now it's like a little bit brighter and kind of easy to navigate, and we're able to kind of fully show new databases and programs and highlight new things that are happening at the library easier.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that. I really like the new design and layout. And I also found all the information about the story times on the Facebook page, too. So that's another great place to check. Okay, so, and then just a reminder, Great American Read is going on. How long is this Great American Read going on?
I think the summer reading part is going to the end of August, but we'll still have some themed events kind of continuing on into the fall. So if you're doing the summer reading where you're taking the list and reading books and then turning in your reviews, that goes until the end of August. But then we'll have a couple more events going on through the fall.
And remind us again how we do the reviews. What do we get from our participation in that and all those details?
Yeah, so at each of the three public libraries, we have like a half-page review that I think it just wants like your name, contact information, a brief review on what book you read. And we're collecting those to do a drawing at the end of the summer, and there'll be some prizes awarded for reading.
So I've read a lot of the books on the list already. Yeah. Can I come in and do reviews of the ones I've read already, or should it be just the ones I've read this summer?
Like, ideally, it'd be ones that you read this summer, but we're not the library police, so we can't really. Yeah, we won't really know if you're like reading them as you go or if you're just filling out a bunch.
Okay, I did start reading one this week. I got an audiobook, so I'll be submitting my review. And, how about you? Did you finish what you were reading last week?
I did finish what I was reading. It was pretty good because it's like a mystery thriller. And now I used Hoopla, actually, after our talk. I went to download an audiobook off Hoopla. And it's, I can't remember what the title. But it's about a woman who does a library bookmobile on the coast of Ireland. So it's kind of like the complete different than the book I was reading. It's very kind of like nice and slow and very... very calming.
Yep. And you just reminded me, I didn't keep my promise that I made last week. I didn't figure out how to use Hoopla and Libby. Not all the way yet. So, okay, I will just move that goal to next week. Okay, now there's a couple other things you wanted to mention. One of them was voter registration.
Yeah, so I think the deadline to register to vote so you can vote in the primary election is this Sunday. And the Juneau Public Libraries is one of the places in Juneau where you can register to vote. And so you can do it at all three branches. You just have to ask at the circulation desk. And it just happens during library hours. So you can come when we're open, fill out the form. We're open pretty much from every day now through Sunday because we're open 7 days a week. So you can just stop by and register to vote.
That's great.
Cool. Yeah.
And the deadline for register... the voter registration deadline for voting in the primaries is this Sunday, July 22nd. If you do happen to miss the deadline, though, still come and get registered to vote because then you can vote in the statewide elections later on.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, Kate, what else you got? Anything else you want to share?
I think one other thing to talk about, I don't know. I know some people know about this. I don't know how many people in Juneau know, but we do have a Tlingit language learning group every Monday night. It's at the downtown library. It starts at 6:00 p.m. and everybody's welcome. All ages, all abilities. Like I've seen, like sometimes there's a couple people there, sometimes there's a whole group. But it's pretty much every Monday all year round, except for when we're closed. If we're closed for like a holiday. And it would be great if some people could stop by if they're interested in learning.
What are the classes like? Are they instructor-led or peer-led?
Yeah, I think there's an instructor. I think the individual who organizes it is there. But then it just depends on, like, who all's there. They have a whiteboard in the room, and so when I come to work the next day, there's always new words and pronunciation guides, and everything is on this clipboard or this, like, whiteboard that's hanging up. So I think everybody's learning new words and practicing speaking and grammar and from what I've heard from other people who have attended, they really enjoy it and it's kind of like a nice opportunity.
Do you speak much Tlingit?
I don't, so I know, unfortunately.
Have you picked up anything from the whiteboard?
I've looked at it a couple times and thought, okay, I need to write this down, and then I like get busy and unfortunately forget. So I need to probably take more time to learn a few more words.
Yeah, sorry, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I hardly know any except for Gunashish and Yake. All right, great. Well, Kate, thank you so much for those updates. So that story time, find locations, dates, and times for those on the website or on the Facebook page. The Watch the Great American Read movie afternoon,
yep.
2 p.m. in the Valley on Sunday, July 22nd. Register to vote at the library and go check out a Tlingit language class Monday nights at 6 p.m. downtown library. Anything else you'd like to share?
Nope, I think that's it for this week. I'll think of more to talk about next week, I'm
As
sure.
As usual, you're holding back for next week.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kate. Thanks for keeping our audience informed and always wanting more, and we'll see you next Thursday.
Great, thank you.
It's just about 19 minutes after the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is here visiting from down south, from California, correct?
Yes.
Welcome to the show, solar energy research engineer Roger Davenport.
Hi, thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you for taking the time to join us today, and welcome to Juneau. How's your visit been so far?
Oh, it's been beautiful. We went out to the glacier this morning.
Mm-hmm. And how's the flooding situation looking out there?
It's pretty wet, yeah. Several of the trails are flooded.
Yes, and I think it's still rising. I don't have the most recent information in front of me, but everyone is aware of the flood warning at least. Well, it's appropriate that we're talking about solar today while the sun is shining, and thanks for being willing to come inside. You're correct me if I'm wrong. I'll just kind of recap some of your credentials. You're retired, but an expert in your field, which is the development of solar power and photovoltaic systems for homes and utility providers.
That's correct, yeah.
A nice, kind of a short summary for what I imagine is a long career. But how did you get into that?
Well, I got interested in solar in high school in physics class there, but then continued on in college. And in my master's program, I chose a mechanical engineering degree that had an energy systems option, so it emphasized solar.
And what do you know about some of the most like recent advancements? What are some of the things that you're excited about today?
Well, I think one of the most exciting things is, although my career has been mostly solar thermal, like hot water and solar thermal power systems for utilities, the really exciting thing that's been happening in the past 10 years is how photovoltaic system prices have dropped precipitously. And whereas we used to talk about, well, someday it's going to be break even against other things, now it is, and past break even. So, for example, in San Diego, where we live in our area, of a rooftop solar system on your house will produce electricity for about a third of the cost of what you would get from the utility.
And that offsets the cost of the installation of the panels and everything else that might have come up front?
Mm-hmm.
So do you know if that's also the case here in Alaska, or are there greater limitations to what we can do to develop the all-electric home as you present?
Yeah, well, the issue here in Alaska, of course, is that you have less sunlight, you have more clouds and that sort of thing.
We have more sunlight in the summer, though.
Yes, you have longer days in the summer and shorter days in the winter, which means you get more of a difference between the seasons, which can be good or bad. But in terms of overall effect, it's about 2.5 times harder here than in San Diego to get a payback. Mm. So in San Diego, the paybacks right now are about 6.5 years on a system that will last 20 or 30 years. And here the payback's more like 16 years. But it's still well within, you know, the warranty of PV panels is over 20 years these days. And systems will last and continue operating for much longer. So it really is a good proposition, even though it's a little closer to break even here.
Gotcha. Now, do you think that'll be the case for the foreseeable future, or do you think eventually prices will come down or costs will come down, make it more cost effective in Alaska?
Well, actually, prices have been coming down and are continuing to come down. I did some research a year ago, and at that point, solar prices had fallen 17% in the past year and 53% over the past 5 years. And as an example, where we live, we put in a system in 2009, and it was $6 a watt at that time for the kit that I bought. And that same kit today is about $1.50. So it's 4 times less than what we paid for it.
Well, that's good news. Do you think that will change like in the next couple of years? Will prices come back up again?
I think the prices will continue to fall because the main thing that's been driving prices has been production. So the production, as it increases, as more people are implementing solar, the prices are continuing to come down. And that's also the case with the batteries that are now becoming more effective.
You'll have to forgive my ignorance from these next couple questions. Is it possible to sort of bank solar energy like on a day, like on, you know, in the summer in Alaska, especially in Southeast, when we have nice sunny days and they're long and we get a couple of them in a row? You store that energy for future use?
Well, that's where the batteries come in. Tesla and others have developed really effective battery systems. Batteries, of course, are only good for maybe 1 or 2 days worth of storage. You wouldn't want to store for a month.
Mm-hmm.
But for 1 or 2 days, they're wonderful. If you go much longer than that, like I say, you have a big change from summer to winter here. If you wanted to store summer energy to use in the winter, the best way to do that would be to make a fuel or something out of the energy in the summer and then store it until winter. So you can do that with hydrogen, or you can do it with ammonia or different things. It's not something you do in your garage, probably.
Well, we'll come back. We'll circle back to that because I have some questions about your garage. And then also here in Southeast, we have a lot of cloudy weather. So the days might be long in the summer, but it could be kind of dark and dim. Does that affect the capturing of solar energy?
Actually, photovoltaic panels are very good at collecting pretty much all the light that hits the front of them. So if it's cloudy, there will be light that's reflected off the clouds or diffused through the clouds, and it will collect all that energy. The other thing you have going for you up here is it's cool, and solar PV panels work better when it's cold, so their efficiency goes up. So that's a help too. And the long days don't hurt.
So it's my understanding that you live in a home that's pretty much all run by renewable energy, and you have you've done a presentation. You sent me some slides about how you guys did that. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you converted your home to renewable energy?
Sure. Yeah, we'd been powered by solar PV for our electrical needs for several years. Like I said, we installed the system in 2009, but we were realizing that as we continued to use natural gas for things like cooking and barbecuing and hot water, that we were still generating greenhouse gases. And so over the years, we've gotten rid of all of the natural gas appliances in our house and added a little bit to our solar array to cover it. So now we're 100% solar and 100% electric. It's sort of funny because in the 50s, they had the tagline that, you know, the home of the future is an all-electric home. And they actually had it right. They just didn't have the solar technology to make it possible to do it.
Well, that and do you feel pretty good about all the decisions that you made and the investments and the upfront costs that you put in?
Yeah, actually, if you look at the investments, you can actually save money over time by doing this. And you don't, for instance, if you're building a house new, you don't have to put in natural gas piping to the house, and you also make it safer because there's less fire hazard, less problems. We have earthquakes down there that cause trouble. And you don't want natural gas leaking under your house after an earthquake.
Certainly not. We get earthquakes up here, too.
Yes.
Not quite as many, probably. And then our energy desk, they're kind of they report from in Juneau and Anchorage and Barrow and all over Fairbanks. We have reporters all over the state. So they're a unit of our news team here at KTOO. They have a couple questions. So these are coming from the energy desk. And I am paraphrasing because they would ask them much more intelligently. But what are your thoughts on renewable resources apart from solar, especially as it applies to Southeast? So we're talking like diesel, tidal, wind.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly wind in an area that has a good wind resource is pretty hard to beat because it continues through the night, for instance. But the explanation I've heard is that a good wind site is a place you probably don't want to live because it's always blowing like crazy. Other things such as tidal, wave energy, those are not easy to do, but they're possible to do, but generally in pretty large sizes. You aren't going to do it for a household. Mm-hmm. And then things like small hydro, though, our friends here, for instance, have a little stream that goes through their property, and that can be quite effective for powering just a single house. And obviously you have bigger hydro plants here that provide a lot of your power. So that's a good one, too.
And heat pumps have been gaining a lot of attention. I know that home installations are on the rise here in Juneau. Is that something that you would consider using or would recommend?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Heat pumps allow you to suck energy out of the ground and pump it into your house. And by doing that, you're using less electricity than you would to just heat the house directly. It's like the air conditioning heating heat pumps that use air source. So you can do air source or you can do ground source. And air source has the problem when the air temperature gets down below freezing, it's hard to keep them going. They don't work very well.
Right. Well, Roger, those are just about all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that you would like to impart to our listeners?
Well, it's an exciting time because, as I said, photovoltaics are now really past parity almost everywhere. You know, in our area, it's well past it. It's a no-brainer to put in solar. Up here, it's not a bad idea. And you might consider if you have a place that's unshaded, faces south, and you have availability of a roof or something, it's really worth it for you to consider it.
So. Well, thank you very much, and I really do appreciate the time you took to be here and talk with us today.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and don't work too much on your vacation.
Never.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. Yo-ho, it's hot. The sun is not a place where we could live. But here on Earth, there'd be no life without the light it gives. We need its light, we need its heat, we need its energy. Without the sun, without a doubt, there'd be no you and me. The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. The sun is hot.
It is so hot that everything on it is a gas: iron, copper, aluminum, and many others.
The sun is large.
If the sun were hollow, a million Earths could fit inside. And yet, the sun is only a middle-sized star.
The sun is far away.
About 93 million miles away. And that's why it looks so small.
And even when it's out of sight, the sun shines night and day. The sun gives heat, the sun gives light, the sunlight that we see. The sunlight comes from our own sun's atomic energy.
Scientists have found that the sun is a huge atom-smashing machine. The heat and light of the sun come from the nuclear reactions of hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, and helium.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
This is Bird Note. Crack of the bat, a blue jay barely flies toward first base. The blue jay glides around first, heading for second base. Deep in left field near the foul pole, an Oriole pounces on the ball. He wings the ball toward second, where a fellow Oriole snares it on a hop, just as the swift blue jay slides toward the base in a cloud of red dust. Meanwhile, somewhere in the heartland, nine cardinals are routing a like number of carnivorous mammals. Cubs or tigers. Or perhaps a school of prodigious fish, marlins or rays. In July, baseball and the boys of summer reign supreme in the sports headlines. Brightly colored birds adorn the caps of the Toronto Blue Jays, the Baltimore Orioles, and the St. Louis Cardinals. For Bird Note, I'm Rocky Riz.
It's time.
time for the Southeast Alaska State Fair, July 26th through the 29th in Haines. 4 days of incredible entertainment includes Youth Orchestra, Anaheia, Stonefed, and many more. Information and tickets available at seakfair.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 25 minutes back, or 25 minutes to the top of the hour. And my next guest is Bryn Fluharty. She's back from SEAC. Welcome back to the show, Bryn.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I wanted to have you back because I didn't quite get to ask all the questions I wanted to ask you the last time you were here. We just got to talk about the movie Irreparable Harm, and that was about it. So how did that go, by the way?
It went really well. It was our third showing, and it was another packed house. We had about 70 to 80 people who showed up, and so we're really pleased with the turnout and really excited to see the interest here in Juneau.
70 to 80 people, that's a great turnout. All right, so SEAC, of course, is the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. So to start us off, could you just tell us briefly about what you do?
So SEAC is a grassroots conservation organization, as our name might indicate, and we do a lot of work around keeping the Tongass wild and looking at timber sales, so focusing on looking at old growth timber sales in the Tongass, and then also protecting the clean waters of the Inside Passage. So that's mostly by taking a look at some of the proposed and active mines in our region and across the border in BC.
In your opinion, is there a pretty good balance between the timber industry and conservation efforts?
You know, the timber industry is really a antiquated industry here in Alaska. Less than 1% of our economy, our jobs, is actually in the timber industry. And so one of the things that we're pushing for is really focusing on what our true economic heart is, and that's timber, or it's not timber. It is tourism and fishing. And so our delegation seems to be focused on really trying to reintroduce this idea of timber into our economy. And it's just not, it's not a reality, and it's actually threatening our other two sectors of the economy.
I see. Well, that's a good segue into talking about some of the other things that you and your colleagues might be working on. What are some projects or campaigns that you've got going on?
So as we were talking about earlier, we had our Irreparable Harm film that we showed last week, 2 weeks ago. Can't even remember now. And so that looks at the Greens Creek mine over on Admiralty Island. And what we're asking there is that the Forest Service redo their 1981 baseline study. And so that way we can actually see what the impacts have been from the mine. They hold it, the mine is really held up as a wonderful example of mining without having an impact on the environment. And what we want to see is that we have some concerns that there could actually be an impact on Hawk Inlet, which is right near the mine, and the marine life in the inlet. And so we want to see what exactly has been going on there.
Yeah, because that study would be almost 40 years old by now.
Yep. So it's about time.
Yeah. It was also the year I was born is how I know that. So what's the Healing Hawk Inlet petition about?
So it's asking the Forest Service to redo that baseline
just
study.
Asking them to do the study. So you can go and sign up, sign the petition, and that's just asking the Forest Service to redo the study?
Yep, and then making it what we call a living laboratory. So using it for universities, for students, to bring people in and really engage them in the sciences and in understanding what the impacts are and how we can really improve the industry as well as just really focus on protecting our environment.
Is there any reason why they wouldn't want to do the study again? I mean, what would your opponent say to this idea? What's the other side of the issue?
You know, I am not well versed on that. That's a great question for our staff scientist, Guy Archibald.
Oh, okay. Well, if he's ever on the show, I'll put that one in my back pocket. All right. And then you mentioned you guys got some news today, and it's something you're going to talk about a little bit later. It was about the road. I don't remember exactly how you worded it.
So we're really excited because after years and years and years of hard work around the Juneau Access Project, we finally got a decision today. We got the record of decision from the Federal
Highway Administration, and they selected the no build or not no action alternative. And so that means that instead of spending over $500 million on the proposed road, we're actually going to be investing more in our ferry system and not building that really dangerous and expensive project.
And that was just announced today?
Yep.
Wow. All right. So, and if you want to know more about that, we're going to get to the next thing on the list. So in addition to the conservation efforts, you also do a lot of community outreach and organize events that are open to the public, such as beach bonfires. And there's one of those tonight. So tell the good people all about that.
So we're really excited to get out and celebrate this wonderful place that we live in. And what better place to do that but on the beach? And so we've been doing every third Thursday during the summer, we do a bonfire out at various beaches here in Juneau. And so this month we're doing it out at Auk Rec. And so we're doing it at the main shelter there. And it's at between 6 and 8 p.m. this evening. And so we'll be out there. We'll have the grill going, and we'll have burgers and snacks available for people. And then we're asking them to bring shareables and just come out and enjoy the evening and celebrate this decision on the road.
Oh, that's great. And they can get more details. They can talk to you guys. I haven't been to one of your bonfires before, so I'm just curious, like, what happens when I show up? How do I find you? Who will be there for me to talk to? Things like that.
So tonight we're going to have our water program staff there. So our Inside Passage Water Program Manager, Sarah Davidson, and then Staff Scientist Guy Archibald, and then a couple of us as well. So myself and a couple other staffers will be there. And, you know, when you drive up, just look for the SEAC sign. We'll have it hanging along the road right by the stairs to come down. And then head on down. And it's just a really fun, relaxing evening of chatting about the issues and just about why we love this place that we live in.
Great. And is the firewood locally sourced?
It is. Guy actually is the one who brings the firewood, and he gets it from some sort of secret stash that he has around here.
I had to ask. Okay, and turnout's been pretty good for these bonfires. I know you've had them in previous years, so they're a fairly popular event.
Yeah, last time we did it on the solstice, and we had about 80 people show up for that as well. So that was really exciting, and you can see a photo on our Facebook page. Go to the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council's Facebook page and see a photo of a number of those people.
I did see that photo. I checked out your Facebook page earlier. The bonfires have their own event pages as well, so that's super helpful. The website is also great, so I just wanted to give you guys a shout-out for having those materials online. They're excellent resources. And we can use them to find out about some upcoming events, such as SEAC Trivia Night. When and where is that?
Yeah, so we're doing that on August 8th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Imperial here in Juneau. It's a really fun evening. We have questions around conservation in Southeast, pop culture, geography, history, all sorts of good stuff.
How much fun is that going to be?
It is a lot of fun. We have packed houses for that. Everybody really seems to enjoy coming out, grabbing a beer, and answering some trivia questions. And you can win prizes from both us and from the Imperial.
Well, that was my very next question. What kind of prizes will there be for the winners?
I believe there are cash prizes from the Imperial and then T-shirts from us. So we have our super stylish T-shirts that are in three different designs. And so they, you know, you can come in and buy a T-shirt or win one and be really super hip in Juneau.
SEAC does have good T-shirts. I like the logos and the designs and everything. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to mention while you're here?
And just our final bonfire on the beach is going to come up on August 16th, and that'll also be out at Auk Rec at 6 o'clock. And so that'll be similar. Come out, hang out with our staff and other supporters from our supporter base, and just great people in Juneau.
Well, that sounds terrific. The bonfire, tonight's bonfire is happening at 6 p.m. at Auk Rec. Look for the balloons and the sign. Check out SEAC online to learn what they're all about. And tune into Juneau Afternoon again in a few weeks to hear from Bryn, hear more from Bryn. And thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you next time.
As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw a boat.
listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and it's Thursday, and now it's time for one of my favorite segments every week, Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney.
Lots to do this week, and, you know, a lot of little treats, special treats for you.
Special treats.
You
well,
just
I can't wait to
we're
hear
talking
what
about the bonfire on the beach, and look what a lovely evening it is, and you just ought to go there, 6 to 8 out at Auk Bay Recreation with SEAC, all sorts of stuff out there. Goldtown is running a great film, Andy Irons, Kissed by God, that's running through the weekend. 12th Night is running, but it's sold out. Oh, darn.
Totally sold out.
And this is their extended run. So note to self, next time you see something by Theater in the Rough, get the tickets right away. The Community Picnic by AELNP, Friday from 11:30 to 2 at Cope Park. They're having a community picnic to celebrate their 125th anniversary. And they'll have a hot lunch off the grill, giveaways, and guided tours of the hydro plant, which was originally built in 1896.
Wow.
So, yeah, wow. The first 125 guests will receive a special AELNP and Alaska Brewing Gold Creek Ale commemorative pint glass.
Wow, so, when is that again?
Yeah, this is happening tomorrow, 11:30 to 2. Watch out. Tomorrow's going to be a beautiful day, and we are going to have our block party outside from 5:30 to 7 in the courtyard at Centennial Hall. It is Clay Good. His group is called Gold Wing. It's going to be all sorts of fun. There's a beer and wine garden, food trucks, games for the kids, vendors, all kinds of things going on. Then at 6:30 and 9:30, there's an open mic and poetry slam at Gonzo. Come on out for that. There's a $5 suggested donation, but it's all out there for a good cause, for poetryslam@gmail.com for more info. The STAR programs are starting to happen with Perseverance Theater. They have Once on This Island, Junior, an irresistible Caribbean fable inspired by Hans Christian Andersen's Little Mermaid. So there's that. Choked Up at the Imperial Bar is a, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it costs $20. So,
you know, they're actually going to be on the show tomorrow.
So, we'll
so
get the
that's
details.
A good little teaser. Yeah. Tune in tomorrow and hear all about it.
Yes, it's Alvin Williams and Emma Arnold and more at 8 p.m. at the Imperial. Again, the film. And then on Saturday from 8 to 10 a.m., there's a Mount Roberts tram and hike with the Audubon Society. You meet at the tram. Members are invited to come and enjoy birding and flowers above the tram. So you can do that. 2 p.m. is As You Like It from STAR at the Perseverance Theater. 7:30 is Extreme Theater from STAR at Perseverance Theater, backed by popular man, visionary Seattle theater artist K.L. Brian Neal, with an actor-devised variety show. And then also, the Juno Lyric Opera has their very special Midsummer Vocal Festival. It's a Broadway splash, and I think there's 35 or some odd musicians performing in this. It's going to be great. There's an art quilter open house. There was a quilter out at the Greening Park, and she's going to show her work. That will be out there, I think, at the park, which is out at Amalga. Once on This Island.
What's the park again?
It's the Greening Cabin out at Amalga.
Okay.
And I guess it'll be open for you can see how things are going. It's a really cool program, actually, where artists get to spend a week or 2 weeks out in sort of just doing their thing. On Monday, it is Michael W. Smith in concert at Centennial Hall. Tickets are $20. It's a benefit for Love, Inc. Michael has won 45 Dove Awards and 3 Grammy Awards. He's coming with 150 backup singers.
150.
It's going to be amazing.
Has he been here before?
I think it was 6 years ago he was okay. here and did a fundraiser for it, and it was sold out. I forgot to check the ticket count right now, but you can get tickets at the Jack, at Hearthside Books, and online. And now you can also get them at Centennial Hall. So if you happen to be wandering through, Laura can print them off for you. I think that there's a wrap-up of the Douglas 4th of July, but, hey, that sounds like a meeting. Let's not go there.
That's not arts and culture.
Yeah. And As You Like It from Star on Wednesday, the 25th. Coming up on the 26th, I just want to throw this out there. We are going to have a community meeting for people who are interested in finding out more about Centennial Hall. People have questions. People have suggestions. People have all sorts of things. If you want to talk about it with us, it's on Thursday, the 26th at 5:30 at Centennial Hall, oddly enough. So
that's about Centennial Hall at Centennial Hall.
Yeah, so that sort of sums up the week. It's going to be fun.
All right. Beautiful weather. Very nice weather. So hopefully people will
balance
indoor activities with outdoor activities. Enjoy the weather. At the very least, you can walk from one thing to another because it's not going to be raining on you.
That's exactly right. And, you know, there's a lot of little treats that you don't normally get, like the community picnic at Cope Park, for example.
Yeah. Did you say that's tomorrow or
that's
Saturday?
That's tomorrow, okay. Friday, from 11:30 to 2.
Okay, great.
Be the first 125 people there.
It's very close to work, and I don't have any plans, so I might just pop on
there.
There
you are. Lunch over.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for being here, Nancy.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. So much for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. If you missed it, our guests were Kate Inge with the update from the Juno Public Libraries and solar energy research engineer Roger Davenport. We also heard from Bryn at SEAC to tell us about the beach bonfire, among other things, issues that they're working on, upcoming events. And we just got our weekly arts and culture activities update with Nancy DeCherney from Arts Up. If you missed it, it's on demand online at ktoo.org. On tomorrow's show, Ben Brown will be your host. You can laugh it up with birdcage art and comedians from the Choked Up comedy series. Clay Good from Goldwing will highlight tomorrow night's concert and block party over at the Jack at Centennial Hall. You can get the details on the midsummer vocal performance from Juno Lyric Opera and learn how you can participate in Juno's local hair donation drive. That's tomorrow live at 3 on KTOO, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available online on demand at ktoo.org. Tonight at 7 p.m., we're going to be featuring Chapter 2 of the latest APM reports. It's called the The show is called Order 9066. Executive Order 9066 was signed by President Franklin D. Roosevelt just months after Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. 120,000 people of Japanese ancestry were forced from their homes on the West Coast and sent to one of 10 relocation camps, and two-thirds of them were American citizens. So tune in tonight, 7 p.m. KTOO, to find out more information about that. If you'd like to go on a Juno, be on a Juno afternoon, go to ktoo.org and click Contact Us. We are on our summer schedule through August with live shows Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and special programming on Mondays and Tuesdays. As I mentioned before, today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.